Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Red alert.
Here's John Williams.
That's clever. Hi, this is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, weekdays 1 to 3. Thanks for joining us. We're until 3 o'clock on Saturdays. I do a little show with some fine folks from 10 a.m. until 12 noon on social media. Search WGN King John's. That's me. Red alert. That's what this guy in Springfield was supposed to do. I guess they've been doing it for a while. And like all TV weathermen, he's a bit of an institution, it sounds like, in Springfield, Illinois. Some guy named Joe Crane, who was on WICS-TV and there at Weather Center 20, or whatever they called it, Storm Center 20. They were supposed to now use red alert when the weather was, you know, maybe going to be bad or was bad. And, yeah, red alert, I said, but it's code red. That's what they call it, which is even, what sounds worse to you, Eric Rong? I know you're trading seats over there with Steve Bertrand, but just real quick, what sounds more alarming to you, red alert or code red?
I think it's kind of a toss-up, but if I heard red alert, I think my ears might perk up a little bit more.
But red's the operative word, and you got that in there either way.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, green is go, good. Sure. Red is bad, stop, alarm. And so a code red, oh my God, code red, what's going to happen?
Well, that means that blood's being spilled somewhere.
Blood's going to be spilled. It's hot. Code red. That's what they call it. You can just see it. Code red. Maybe streaming across the bottom. Or maybe they interrupt a soap opera and say, okay, as you can see, out here in Effingham, and these storms are blah, blah, blah. And so they wanted them to use code red when the weather looked like it might get bad. And so Joe Crane, who is the TV, now it says here staff member. Yeah, okay, he's a meteorologist. Because, you know, I could do the weather. I'm not a meteorologist. He's a meteorologist, so you think he knows a little bit about what he speaks. Maybe locally he should be able to decide. But it sounds like the TV stations that are in the group that his station in Springfield is in all have to answer to corporate management. And the management said, listen, use code red. Because then people will be alarmed, they'll tune in, they'll listen, they'll watch longer. It'll be a great ploy for us. It'll also be a great service for our viewers, right? So if the weather's bad, we need to alert them. But I think it's a fine line that you cross somewhere from a service to the viewers to let's just do anything we can to get them to watch longer. That will make us more profitable. And I don't think any TV stations have really figured that out. Especially since TV stations cover such a broad area, you can justify it at any time. This is what happened in the Chicago area a month ago or so. There were some storms that were tracking in like Kane County and west of the metro and weren't going to affect the vast majority of the people that were watching Channel 2, 795. But it would have been a great service to the people in Ottawa, Illinois. So they go ahead and spend a long time doing that with alarming graphics and serious faces. There was a great service to the 20,000 people that live in Ottawa. But meanwhile, the 6 million people that live in Chicago are kind of being, I think, fed a line. I think it's a hook. Okay, so here's how you get fired. He's doing these, so they've gone to the code red phrase down there in Springfield. Now he's going to go ahead and ad lib and explain to the viewers what he thinks about that. Evidently, they've been getting a lot of social media posts, a lot of conversation in Springfield about this. So the meteorologist for that TV station says,
it's not the perfect solution because, of course, with code red, it's all-inclusive. It doesn't recognize that not all storms are created equal. On the other hand, the National Weather Service has the severe weather outlook every day, which offers a scale, if you will, not only in a color-coded scale, but on a 1-5 scale. A lot of people not very happy with this over the last few months since we've implemented it on Storm Team 20. That's evident by the thousands of comments on social media, letters to the editor, frequent calls to local talk radio shows. We've heard you, and yes, we realize you have some very strong and passionate views about it. We want you to know it's not us. This is a corporate initiative, the Code Red Alert, and behind the scenes, many of us have tried to dissuade it for the last few months to try something else that's less controversial to the viewers. So keep in mind, despite the fact that this facility is owned by a corporation, it's still licensed under the authority by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity. So you still have a voice. Keep those cards and letters coming.
Yeah, keep those cards and letters coming. But I won't be here when they get here. I would have, you know, I salute what that guy's trying to do, but I don't think ever it's a good idea to call out your bosses or owners on their TV station or radio station. I think if he had just not said it was a corporate cram down, he might still have his job.
Or encourage people to narc on them to the government. That's a problem.
Well, I'm not exactly sure where he was going with that. I'm familiar with some of the language of our industry and radio and TV stations are licensed to serve the interest, convenience, and necessity.
You have to justify your license, and if so, if you have a bunch of people complaining to the FCC about what you do.
So he really is insinuating that this is not in your best interest. It's not in the, you know, service to the community. It's something else, which is a fair point. I mean, I'm making that point for him, but I don't have a lot to lose here. He does. So I'm not entirely surprised that he's lost his job. I mean, there he is sort of devaluing the very product that they're pushing. It's a tough place for him, right? Because that's his career. That's his, he's a meteorologist. This is his lifeblood, right? And they're telling him to sell it even when he thinks it's not necessary. So, you know, what's he going to do? I don't know if Lauren Lapka wants to be a big part of this conversation. But that's the very same company that you sort of bristled at when they wanted you to. Were you supposed to read one of those editorials from Sinclair?
Yes, the very scary viral video of all the anchors reading the exact same thing at the exact same time. I was supposed to be one of them.
Yeah.
And I said no.
And did they threaten you with your job when that happened?
It's kind of hard to say. They didn't say it out loud. They, for over a month, met with us, me and my co-anchor that also said no, trying to convince us why we should and why they couldn't change the script. And the best thing that could happen is I think that video came out because who knows what would have happened if it didn't. I might have been with him, that
guy. Yeah, sure, sure. You would have been on the street. I'm surprised that that was even a conversation. I mean, I can just imagine them saying, you got to do this. Everybody's doing this. And you say, no, I can't do that. And they say, don't come in tomorrow. But it wasn't like that, huh?
No, they started talking, you know, all these various reasons why this script was chosen and, you know, things along those lines and trying to persuade us. It was frustrating because as somebody that wanted to make it work and changing the script to a way that made me and my co-anchor comfortable wasn't an option, apparently. And I never understood that.
To be clear, this wasn't a weather thing. This was more a political editorial that Sinclair TV stations across the country were asked to read. And the viral clip was all of them reading them in lockstep, very robotically, and it was kind of creepy.
Yes, it was a promotion centered around this whole fake news era and trying to persuade the viewers that we don't lean left or right and we're always very fair, but we also encourage people to reach out if they think we aren't fair.
But as I recall, if I may, Lauren, the gist of it seemed to be sort of acknowledging that the mainstream media is putting out fake news And, right. and we're not going to be part of that here. And I think the premise is what bothered a lot of people, because it seemed to be carrying the bucket for the president in the White House then.
Yes. I think a phrase that was being carried around was propaganda, that message. So it clearly was not getting across the message that I think they were hoping to get.
Well, I don't know if it backfired, but it sure did have interesting ramifications for everybody and that network. And that's Sinclair, the group that was going to buy WGN radio and TV as well. The FCC put the kibosh on that. But Sinclair owns the station in Springfield that, instead of asking for this editorial, was asking their meteorologists to all use code red. And, you know, just because you have the technology doesn't mean you should deploy it to the point that you start to. I mean, I remember when just recently I was out in Joliet with my folks, and we're sitting there and the alerts are coming on TV and everybody was kind of getting panicky about it. And the weather wasn't that bad where we were. And so I thought, I don't know what the responsibility of the TV station is, but I don't ever remember during a code red or whatever you want to call the weather alerts when they do that, them saying, now for some of you, it's going to be okay. Not all of you have to run for your lives here. I think it backfires on them in the long run because mostly it doesn't harm people. And then when there really is a serious situation, you don't take it as seriously as you should.
I completely disagree with you because if you're watching TV and Demetrius and those guys skilling during that last storm, they were very specific about the areas where the storm was or where it was going, right? I was watching in Lake County, and I knew that the storms in Lake County, Indiana, weren't going to impact me.
In Lake County, Illinois?
Well, no, these were in Lake County, Indiana. They were moving through Southern Cook.
And, oh, I see, in Europe, north, yeah.
I mean, you know, I have the wherewithal to know that this I'm not in the path of the storm. I don't know why you. This is one of those things I don't understand what you're thinking.
Hmm. Yeah, I just did 12 minutes on it.
I know. Well,
I did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I just think that if there's bad weather, I don't know. I kind of enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, that's interesting, Steve, because I do think it's kind of interesting to see the science and the radars and if they have some images of funnel clouds.
And there was real science on that day. You know, they were talking about these hooks and they were showing them on the radar and things I didn't understand before. You know, you got to add a new appreciation for them.
Well, two things happen. One is people want to watch their TV shows, number one. So they always interrupt something that somebody's watching. It's the game or it's the soap opera, it's the show, whatever it is. So that gets to be a little annoying. And then you watch it, you go, well, this applies to people in Northwest Indiana, and I live on the north side of Chicago, so this really isn't doing me any good, right? If maybe I care about what the weather's like in Northwest Indiana, but mostly I was watching this other show. So A, you're in the way. And then B, I think the calculus is the information I'm gaining more relevant, helpful, or entertaining than what I was watching anyway? And I think they're a little devious about that.
John, if we can save just one Hoosier, that's okay for me.
Well, so that's all, in a way, that's neither here nor there, which is a Midwestern saying, by the way. If you're a weatherman and you're on TV and you're supposed to do what the boss says, issue a code red and then go, 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 boy. If you say, hey, everybody, just so you know, we think it's crap here, but we have to do it anyway. Joe Crane, God bless you. You have the courage of your convictions, but I'm not surprised that you're not on TV right now.
But so you're arguing two different things, though, I think. He wasn't saying he shouldn't be on TV, I think, if I can speak for him. I think he was saying we shouldn't be calling it a code red.
Shouldn't be sensationalizing the
right.
weather.
So, well, sure.
So we should be saying there are really these bad storms coming at you, but it's the calling it a code red, which is a made-up sort of thing.
Yeah. For instance, we've reached out to Joe Crane of Springfield. I haven't been able to get a hold of him, or at least Elif hasn't, but I think here's what happens. He pointed out in that clip that the National Weather Service has a 1 through 5 scale, you know, from moderate to severe run for your lives. And he's saying we just have code red. You know, which sort of covers all the bases, but is overkill, if I may speak for him now. And I sure get that point. You would agree with me on that, right, Steve? That if it's yes or no, code red or no code red, that's a little excessive.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, you may have a comment. The number's 312-981-7200.
Wish I could roll on back to that old town road. I wanna ride till I can't.
Is everybody loving this song as much as I am?
Take my horse to the old town.
I know I'm sure that we're all on the border of being tired of it, but Old Town Road has an interesting history. It's a country song and then kind of a crossover hip-hop thing, etc. But what's very interesting, if you followed this story, we'll go to your calls on the weather here in just a second. But just while I'm thinking of that, that song is so ubiquitous. There's a little boy in Minnesota who is autistic, nonverbal, and his mother and father are raising them. I've seen their pictures. They seem like wonderful people. And there's their little child. The little boy's about maybe 4 years old. 4-year-old son named Daniel, and he's just standing there one day, and out of the blue, he starts to sing the song. It's a real short clip. I understand that he was able to do more of the song, and the parents say those are the first words they've really ever heard him say. All of a sudden, he starts doing Old Town Road. And so they told the therapist, and they tell everybody, and they said, well, now we're going to incorporate music into this autistic child's therapy or, you know, language skills, trying to get him to reach out to him. But he's a nice little kid, and all of a sudden he just goes, Old Town Road, na-na-na-na-na. The mother is a producer at the radio station I used to work at in Minnesota, WCCO. So happy for all of them. And I guess at that house, they are not tired of hearing the Billy Ray Cyrus song that's been remixed now. It's my kind of cool story. Back to the story of the guy in Springfield, the weatherman who lost his job. I said because they were asking him to sensationalize the weather. Steve didn't see it that way. Hey, Frank, you're on the air. What did you want to say?
Can you hear me?
I sure can, Frank. What's on your mind?
Okay, I was going to say that the weathermen have been sensationalizing the weather for years, but it just seems like it's getting worse and worse with each passing year as they're forced to sensationalize it to increase the ratings. They give you the little teasers, you know, during your shows, got to watch out for this storm coming in, and then, you know, it ends up half the time that they're crying wolf.
I appreciate the call, Frank. We got to run. Thanks for waiting and for jumping in. Leo, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoy your show.
Listening to
it every day.
Hey.
You know, a lot of the local stations have the mobile weather station to where it's Storm Tracker riding down the Kennedy. And there are times where we do have severe, heavy rains that turn into partial hailstorms that people should be notified. But most times when we're being told the weather and the meteorologists, they're not called weather people anymore, they're called meteorologists, projecting the weather, that it's nothing more than a seasonal rain, a summer rain, and nothing more. And do we really need to know the weather 7 or 10 days in advance, where next Tuesday it won't be 70 degrees, it'll be 71.
Thanks for the phone call, Leo. I appreciate you joining us. They call them meteorologists because they are meteorologists. If I ever become one, you'll hear that too. My problem with the 10-day forecast is that it's just always pretty wrong. It's because, trust me, anybody that's traveled, when you're packing or thinking about a trip 10 days out, you're always looking at that city's weather.
You just went to England.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Before you left, you said, all I'm doing is looking at the 10-day forecast. That's all I do. I'm looking
all
at
I
the
do.
10. Right. Okay. So, well, then, but
it's not that helpful because when it's, because it'll say 10 days out that it's going to be sunny and 71. 2 days out, it says 58 and cloudy with a chance of storms.
And yet you kept looking at it all the time.
I did. And I thought, why did I just ruin myself for 9 days? Because sometimes it's the flip of that. Oh, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be terrible.
Right.
And you're having bad vibes for 9 days. And then the next day they go, hey, it's going to be pretty good after all. I go, well, then what am I doing with this stupid 10-day forecast? That's what I say sometimes. A little Radiohead for you here. 138 on WGN. This is John Williams. Among the texts about our last conversation about weather stations that maybe hype or overhype the bad weather, John, I commend that gentleman for standing up for what he feels is right. That weather guy in Springfield lost his job, but he stood up to the corporate bully. Good for him. He'll be fine. Hi, John. There was an episode on the new Murphy Brown. It's been canceled of this exact situation. Really interesting. Wow. First time in memory, John. I don't agree with Steve Bertrand. All hail King John. Huh. I completely agree with John, says the next texter. Enough of these emergencies. They start to carry less weight. Hey, John, I pay less and less attention to weather alerts because there's so many of them and they don't pan out for my area. But another texter, John, called in. It was actually a listener who called in and said, these things save lives. Don't put them down. Moving on now to this Radiohead story. You see what happened, Radiohead, the band?
You know, before you do that,
yeah,
I'm just reading a Tribune that I don't think, I didn't see this. I don't know if you've seen this. It's a, we've got a weather bulletin coming in here.
Yeah.
From downstate, late Monday, WICS General Manager Rick Lipp said in a video posted to the station's website that Code Red will no longer be fitting. It will be replaced by Weather Worn.
Wow.
And Lipp said that managers will work to better define specific areas facing the greatest weather threat.
Did they say what happened to that weather guy, Crane, the weatherman?
He changed the policy.
Yeah, but maybe at the expense of his job.
Well, I probably think so, yeah.
How about that? How about that?
I believe I also read that a lot of sponsors were pulling.
Right.
I saw a billboard in Springfield, like support Joe Crane, that sort of thing. But I hadn't heard that angle on it. I didn't think the little man could get it done. Well, that's the most uplifting thing, except for the part where he might not have a paycheck. That's the most uplifting thing I've heard in a while. Good for him. Good for them. Good for the station. Good for America. Radiohead has responded to hackers and released 18 hours of previously unheard OK Computer material in the aid of Extinction Rebellion. That's the sort of obtuse headline in the news today. Radiohead's the band. They had an album called OK Computer. When they recorded that, they had hours of stuff they didn't release that was saved and cataloged on, I think, a thumb drive. Somebody got a hold of that and tried to extort the band. They said, if you don't give us... What was it, $20,000? No, I think it was...
No, $150,000.
$150,000. $20,000 is another number that's going to come up here in a minute. If you don't give us $150,000, then we are going to release it on our own. You won't have control of it. And the band said, rather than that, we'll release it ourselves, even though maybe they didn't want it put out. You know, you want to protect your product. And then if you want to buy it or make a donation, you can. And they'll take the proceeds from that and give it to an environmental group for charity. So they sort of have taken the opportunity away from the hackers. But think about that. It's a ransom note that they get. It says, we're going to release your material unauthorized unless you give us $150,000. This sort of thing happens to companies all the time. I know of one company in the Chicago area, just recently this happened to them. They got a ransom email. It said, we have hacked your computers, and we will compromise your data. We'll erase some of your contacts and data and information unless you give us, I think it was $20,000. The company said, no, we're not going to pay ransom. And on deadline, boom, they lost their data. They lost their contacts. The whole company was reduced to answering phones, taking notes, and doing it manually. Another company I know of had the same sort of thing happen. They paid the ransom. Literally, you send, I don't know if it's Bitcoin or how you do it, but they somehow put money in an account. They lose that, and then the other guy comes and retrieves it, and the data was saved. So paying the ransom worked. But it's a real interesting call for you as a company. A, you don't know if you pay the money, is it going to actually save you? And B, you don't want to reward these pirates anyway. There's a guy named Brett Johnson that we talked about, who is a computer hacker himself. Now he's working on the other side, but he was in our studio a few months ago, and we called him to talk about this again. Hey, Brett, welcome back to WGN Radio. How are you, sir?
Hey, John, I'm great. How are you doing today?
Good. So what do you do now? What's your living these days?
My living these days, I work for the good guys. So I do a lot of consulting with Fortune 50, Fortune 500 companies, financial institutions, consumer groups, law enforcement. I speak all over the planet and use the knowledge that I acquired as a criminal to help people protect themselves against the type of people that I used to be.
You were on the FBI's most wanted computer hacker list, right?
I was. I was one of the United States most wanted, yes.
What do you make of this?
Went to prison, escaped from prison. So, yeah, long story.
Yeah. I know. We couldn't believe the stuff that was coming out of your mouth, but I did when you were in our studio. In fact, did you not escape from prison more than once, or am I confusing you with somebody else?
I was just a one-time deal. So I escaped from prison when I was out on the lam for 3 to 4 weeks, and they caught me and sent me to a real prison where it was almost impossible to escape. As a matter of fact, I didn't after that. And I'm glad I didn't, because I was able to turn my life around at that point.
What do you make of this Radiohead story?
You know, I'm glad that Radiohead took that route of just releasing the music themselves. If you look at ransomware, it's all about either as an individual or a company understanding your place in the cybercrime spectrum. And what I mean by that is that you have a place in that spectrum, that map of a cybercriminal. You, depending on who you are, is how a cybercriminal will victimize you. For example, if you're a CEO, I will victimize you differently than if you work in food service. If you're a company, I'm going to look at a company. Can I use the information that your company has to sell it on the black market, like PII stuff, or is it information that I can lock down and hold for ransom? And that, of course, is what happened with Radiohead. Is they had information, they threatened Radiohead, if you don't pay us X amount of dollars, we're going to release this information. Radiohead understood, you know, hey, they've got the information anyway. Even if we pay them, the chances of them releasing it pretty high. Let's just go ahead, take the higher road, tell them to, you know, basically bug off. We'll release it ourselves.
How do people make payments when they do that?
It tends to be with Bitcoin, so some sort of cryptocurrency. What happens is you take like a ransomware program like called BitPamer. The PGA was hit with that a couple of years ago. It locked their entire systems down. And what happens is when you're hit with ransomware, you cannot access the information. The only way to get it back is to pay the ransom. Unfortunately, we have a lot of attackers out there that install ransomware on your system, and they don't care about giving your data back. So they'll take the money. They just won't ever get you'll never get access to your information again after that. So you have to be extremely careful.
I cited a case where I know where somebody did, in fact, not lose their data. I don't know that
you're absolutely right.
So maybe, I don't know, what advice do you have to companies or bands, whomever, what advice do you have to them when somebody says, we're going to shut you down unless you give us X thousands of dollars?
The problem is that you don't know who your attacker is. You have to realize that your attacker is a criminal. So the criminal is motivated by profit. Now, if it's a ransomware group of attackers like BitPamer, certainly they give the information back. They'll even have someone remote in and help you get your data back after you pay the ransom. But there's tons of these ransomware attackers that will install ransomware. You pay them the $15,000 or $20,000, or in the case of the PGA, $250,000, and you never get the data back.
Wait a minute.
So you have to.
What happened to the PGA? The Professional Golf Association? That PGA?
Professional Golf Association was hit with BitPamer. They paid the ransom. Yeah, okay, so they got the data back.
And that worked in that case, but it cost them $250,000.
That worked in that case.
It's amazing, though, isn't it? I mean, I don't know exactly how this works, but somebody's going to withdraw that money from this BitPamer site using Bitcoin, say. Well, somebody must know who that is if you register with a company to receive. Why are you laughing at me? Doesn't it seem logical that somebody would know?
No. See, that's the miracle of crypto, of a lot of these cryptocurrencies. A lot of them are privatized. Now, Bitcoin is not, but it allows people to move value or currency somewhat anonymously. So you've got this thing called the blockchain, which is a distributed ledger system. Everyone shares that ledger that uses Bitcoin. And those transactions are kept track of, but you really don't know who's on the other side of that wallet, of who's collecting the money, or even who, a lot of the time, who's sending the money. It takes a lot of work to try to figure out who that is. So you can move massive amounts of money pretty anonymously. That's one of the big miracles of cryptocurrency, is it allows criminals to launder money anonymously.
Does that have a legitimate use?
You know, yes, it does. So we're looking now at cryptocurrency, it's much cheaper to move massive amounts of value than using cryptocurrency than it is to use banks, traditional bank transactions with moving currency. So there are definitely use cases for blockchain and cryptocurrency. Unfortunately, most of it right now is laundering money. If you look at the South Koreans, basically what they do is they use cryptocurrency to launder money. China, the exact same thing. A lot of the people who use cryptocurrency in China, it's strictly laundering money. Certainly, all criminal transactions online involve cryptocurrency and their ability to launder those funds.
Well, do the cryptocurrency people care? I mean, do they feel bad about the fact that they're aiding and abetting this sort of theft?
You know, I've talked to some people that do. I've talked to a lot of people who simply don't. What we see time and again with technology, if technology can be used to help people remain anonymous or to launder funds, the first adopters are criminals. Yeah. That's what happened with Bitcoin. The first adopters are criminals. Now, as Bitcoin is becoming mature, we see that legal institutions are coming in, that it's becoming mass adopted by, you know, legitimate people. But initially, no, it tends to be criminals. And honestly, I don't think that most anyone cares about that who uses the currency either.
Is this business of ransomware on the uptick? Has it peaked? I mean, can you talk about the incidence of that?
Sure. It's not going anywhere at all. So what we're seeing is that a lot of fraud is being stopped online. So if you take counterfeit credit cards, the chips that are now in the cards, that's stopped a lot of physical credit card theft. Well, those attackers, they're looking to move into different areas, and one of the areas is ransomware. So it's easy to install ransomware. If you look at phishing attacks, 92% of every single breach begins with a phishing attack. Company breaches, 56% of every single company has been a victim of a third-party breach. So some of these third-party vendors, which access a company's database or their computer system, they're not secure. So what an attacker does is he compromises the third-party company, and by compromising the third-party company, he gets access to the main target that he's looking at. So you've got these types of problems that are around here that are allowing criminals to become more successful at crime, and that's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Companies that I'm thinking of are not small companies, too. You'd think they'd have enough sophistication or resources to keep this from happening to them. I don't know if these cyber criminals attack big companies, medium companies, small companies. Who do they go after?
It's everyone and anyone, whoever they can get access to. So the problem is that there are so many exploits out there, known exploits that criminals can use. If you look at the largest cyber attack in history, it was called NotPetya. It happened in 2017. It was a nation-state attack. You had Russia attacking the Ukraine, and the way they did that is they used known exploits. They compromised basically the Ukraine's version of QuickBooks. They compromised that and used that third party of QuickBooks, of Ukraine's QuickBooks, to install what looked like a ransomware attack throughout the planet. It started with Ukraine, but it quickly hit Maersk, it hit pharmaceutical companies, it shut down all these companies. It cost billions and billions of dollars, this attack did. It's something that is not going anywhere. It's going to continue to get worse.
My producer said, hey, John, you got to stop talking to Brett Johnson. We got more things to do. You are the former FBI Most Wanted list member who's now working for the good guys. If people want to use your resources, Brett Johnson, how do they get a hold of you?
Sure, you can contact me on LinkedIn. You can also go to my website, www.anglerphish.com.
Nice to talk to you, Brett. Let's visit again. Thanks for your help today.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
He's glad that Radiohead did what they did.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
That's funny.
Here's John Williams.
That's my job. Hi, this is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3.
Lord have mercy.
Unless they take me out sooner. I'm here Saturdays, 10 to noon on social media. Look for WGN King John. Thanks for tuning into the show today. We've been kind of busy with a few topics. Just going back very briefly to the story Steve was talking about a moment ago, and that is that weather guy in Springfield, evidently he's got the company to change the way they were alerting people. I thought it was alarmist. Steve didn't agree, but It sounds like somebody was listening. Now, does the guy get his job back? I don't know the answer to that question. I'm also interested if you have been hacked the way we were describing what happened to Radiohead or some other companies I know of in the Chicago area. Members of our own staff who get an email saying, we've captured your information online. We're going to never give it back to you, or we'll destroy it, or we'll use it for our own benefit unless you pay us ransom. There's ransomware out there, and you may get an email like that, and you either don't pay them thousands of dollars, and then you're compromised. You know, all of a sudden, all of your contacts are gone from your data, or something like that. Or you do pay them, and then maybe the stuff is saved, but maybe not. It's a roll of a dice. But isn't it amazing that then there you are deleting, you know, you're debiting money from your checking account, buying Bitcoin, parking it in a place where somebody then goes online and takes it. And there's no way for the world to know who that is stealing from you online. That you talk about a hard check to write, especially since you don't know if the goods will be there after you write it. I'm just wondering if that's happened to you, what your experience has been. To me, that's so bizarre. I can't imagine it's happened to anybody. But if it has, 312-981-7200. NBA Finals last night, game 1-2, 3-1. That was game 5 last night, right, Kevin? Was that game 5?
Yes, it was, John. And what a game it was.
Kevin Powell, WGN Radio Sports. When Kevin Durant went down early in the second quarter for the Golden State Warriors, the Warriors were looking like the Warriors again, thanks in no small part to the fact that Klay Thompson was hitting. Steph Curry didn't have a great night, but you didn't know it yet. And Durant was just off the charts. He wasn't missing.
Yeah, he had 11 points in 11 minutes. He made all three of his threes, and he was doing Kevin Durant things. He looks just fine.
I've never paid more attention to the width of someone's legs than I did last night. Talk about spindly. That guy has the pencil thinnest legs you've ever seen.
Yeah, and it's I've heard that mentioned many times from reporters who sit courtside saying you will not believe if you are standing close to the man how thin and narrow and lanky the guy is. But it's worked for him here. He got 6'11". He can get a shot anywhere on the court. He's one of the best scorers we've seen arguably ever in the NBA because of his body frame. And it broke down last night, unfortunately.
He planted his leg, and it just gave. And it wasn't one of those gross injuries where a leg hyperextends. But ESPN took the video, amplified it, and you could literally underneath his skin see the muscle pop. You could just see this thing go whoop. And it looks like his Achilles heel snapped.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to play doctor, but there are some great Twitter accounts to follow if you're a sports nut and you're watching and there's an injury and you're kind of curious what's going on. And you know, a couple of the guys who are doctors, these aren't just fans pretending to be doctors on Twitter, but you know, kind of taking a close look at it and basically saying exactly what you said, John, where the muscle actually flexes so hard and that causes the Achilles to rupture. So he's getting a second opinion on it today in New York. Obviously, he's done for the series and potentially all of next year. So not only does this affect this series, but also the landscape of the NBA next season.
Kevin Durant is 31, 35. No, I think he's 35.
No, he's 30, 31.
I know it's a three. Is it 31?
Not 35. It's 30 or 31. 30 years old. He'll be 31 for next, in September.
Hold on a second. Are you sure about that? It's just a year we're arguing over now. I thought it was 31. Okay, so there he is in his 30s. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of teams are vying for him, literally arranging who they have and where they put their money so they can all go for Durant when the season ends. And the word is that I'm reading that he'll still be a major block player. Teams will still pay for his services and risk that he will be able to play for them.
I think so too, John. I mean, he has the opportunity to opt into the final year of this contract. He has a 31, maybe that's the number we were looking for, $31 million option for next season that even if he doesn't play, he can pick that up, rehab, still be considered in the Warriors organization, and then hit free agency after that. Or he can risk opting out of this contract and, like you said, go for another max deal.
I was watching MSNBC, actually, just because it was up after the business show. And they've got stocks and things scrolling, and they were having a serious conversation about, was it wrong for the Warriors to play Durant last night? Should he have been in that game? And I thought that was an easy one. What's your answer to that question?
You did find it easy, huh? So I thought that to me it's not an easy one, I guess, because we don't know all the details. We don't know how much that calf injury that he suffered, that he missed, what, 10 games for during the postseason? Because he suffered a calf strain, and this was his first game back since the calf strain. I mean, I don't know how much that calf strain impacts or played a role into this Achilles injury.
Well, let's put it this way. When you send him out there, you don't know that his leg's going to have a catastrophic injury. He, the doctor, the team must have thought it was a risk worth taking. Why do you take the risk? Because you want to win an NBA championship. Well, good Lord, you're in the championship round, and you're down two games. If ever there was a need for you to be in that game, it is right now. If you were up 3-1, maybe you don't play him. If you're up 3-2, maybe you don't play him. But if it's a win-or-go-home game, then you play Kevin Durant. And by the way, he's 30 years old. I'm sure that somewhere somebody was thinking like this, and it may have been Kevin Durant. He's had a good run. If this compromises his career, he's rich. He'll have had everything you want to brag about. And if it works, then maybe they win the championship because of him. This is why you have Kevin Durant.
Right.
You play Kevin Durant.
That's why Kevin Durant left the team that drafted him to go win championships. He left to join the Warriors, a team that was already one of the best teams in the NBA. And he has done that. He won championships. He won rings. Look, I think the Warriors were very cautious with this. As I mentioned, he missed 10 games in the playoffs, John.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the NBA. This is the postseason.
And they did okay without him. I mean, they were pretty good without him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that, frankly, to me, the Golden State Warriors are the Splash Brothers. It's Green. It's Iguodala. It's those guys, Livingston, and then Durant was just like icing on the cake.
Here you go. The Smash Brothers are probably the best roster in the NBA. Oh, also, we're going to add probably the best player in the NBA.
That should have been illegal to begin with. He shouldn't even be on that team. They're too good with him.
I've been pretty vocal against Kevin Durant, where it was sort of the, I don't mean to pile on as the guy's dealing with a major injury here, but it was sort of like, okay, you can't beat him, join him. Right? He left the Thunder to join the Warriors, a team who had already won.
I have no trouble with LeBron or Durant or anybody going to a place that meets their needs.
It's still kind of lame, though, isn't it?
No, I don't
think
so.
The corners? Really?
I'm sorry. If a team wants to pay you a lot of money because you're one of the best players and put you on the best team, and then you guys win some championships, do you have an obligation to take some other team and bring them up? That's a league problem. That's not your problem, Jack. Here, Durant looks like he's going to save the day for Golden State. Mm-hmm. Golden State ended up winning the game by one.
Yeah, maybe he did, because who knows if they win that game without him. You know?
Absolutely.
The quarter and a half he played, and they had an early lead to kind of set the tone and gave him a little bit of a cushion, although it disappeared late. I mean, you could argue that helped them win that game, and then now you go back to Oakland.
I couldn't agree with you more. Give him the game ball. So then, and then he goes down, and everybody knew when he went down. Oh, my God, it's happening. That leg in that spot is now injured. And everybody immediately thought, he's out. And everybody in that arena immediately started cheering. And then there was sort of like 3 seconds of that. And then even the Toronto Raptors players held up their hands trying to quiet the crowd down, like, let's not go there.
Yeah.
And as Durant limped off, they applauded him.
Man.
Now, I'm not sure if the latter part of that story makes up for the beginning part of that story.
Yeah.
You know, like, I could see them going, oh, my God, hey, he's injured. And then, you know, you have a moment where you go, oh, wait, that's a terrible thing for me to be cheering.
Yeah.
And so then you hate to see that happen, and then you applaud the guy as a good, trying to be a good sport. But I don't know if that's too little too late, you know, because their first reaction was not pretty.
No, it wasn't. And look, there was a lot of people are debating this. Should Raptors fans be ashamed and this and that? Look, every sporting event ever, there's always some idiot in the stands and somebody's going to be vocal and do something dumb. I'm not going to. It was bad. It was a very bad look for Toronto right when he got hurt, especially when you saw a lot of guys clearly mocking him that he went down. And I saw some guys kind of pointing and waving goodbye and with a smile on their face and sort of those sorts of things. But they were, if I heard it right, I heard some KD chants as he was walking off the court as well from the
hometown
Raptors crowd.
So. Drake behaved himself, I hope.
Yeah, for Drake standards. He was animated as usual, but
I've enjoyed him and Green just kind of exchanging faces. That's been fun.
Ed's a lair for sure. He's definitely the face of that. Is Drake the face of the franchise? I almost hate, because Kawhi Leonard is playing like on a different planet right now. And I don't even know if he's going to be with the Raptors next year. I mean, he's another guy who could be a free agent next
season.
Plus,
Kawhi Leonard's boring. I mean, he's really good, but he's got that San Antonio vibe to him. It's like, I'm just going to go out and win games. Okay, well, you're the winningest player of basketball, but dang, you've got no personality out here. I mean, he's a guy who decidedly rests during timeouts. Even during a free throw, he'll grab a knee so as to maximize energy, so as to be the most efficient basketball machine that he can be. And he's that, but he's just not an interesting guy out there.
Go ahead.
Nah, I'm done talking. By the way, David wanted to jump in here. David, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hey, King John. Great show. I heard on Steve Cochran's show this morning that he saw several doctors that he was completely clear to play. It's just... it's a very unfortunate thing. I really feel for the guy. He's great.
Yeah, me too. I mean, he's right. You sometimes forget he's 6'11". Think about that.
Right. And the way he can handle the ball and basically get any shot he wants because of his height, but also he can drive to the rim if he wants.
Yeah. Hey, he was just draining threes last night in the first quarter. He was just like, wow, it was amazing. Yeah.
And not tentative at all either, right? Like, just, no, I got this. Boom. I got this. Boom.
Well, I mean, what he was doing in pregame workouts, he was putting on a highlight show. He was spinning the ball around, hitting threes. He was throwing down dunks. So he's like, okay, looks like he's good to go.
David, thanks for your phone call. Kevin Powell, WGN Radio Sports. I wanted to ask you about one other story, and that's the Big Poppy story.
Yeah.
We were talking about Kevin Durant and the Golden State Warriors. By the way, Producer Aleph, I should have asked you this a long time ago. How old is Kevin Durant, please?
Kevin Durant turns 31 on September 29th.
Okay, so there you go. You were right, Kevin. 31. He's 30 now. I saw the 31. 31 million, too.
31 million. Yeah, a lot of 30s to sort out.
Well, now how's a talk show host supposed to know which one is
which? Right.
David Ortiz, affectionately known as Big Poppy, the baseball star of the Boston Red Sox, and really more than just a Red Sox star. He was a baseball star. People loved him the world over. And he was in his native Dominican Republic at a bar the other night. And somebody just walked up from behind him and shot him and then ran out of the bar. The crowd chased him and nearly beat that guy to death.
Yeah.
So he has lost some of his intestines. I believe he lost his gallbladder. His wife issued a statement saying that he's actually doing pretty well under these circumstances. Have you heard any other news along those lines?
He underwent a second surgery. He's in Boston. The Red Sox have been pretty supportive and great with this as well, considering what he means to that town and that team. They sent their team plane to the Dominican to pick him up. They brought him back. He landed in Boston. He was transferred to Massachusetts General Hospital. He did undergo a second surgery late last night that went past midnight, so I guess into early this morning. It wasn't exactly clear what the second surgery was for, but they say he's in stable condition. And, yeah, just a weird, crazy story. And
and you know, I watched the video of it. I suppose everybody's seen it by now. Anybody that's interested, it's not that graphic. It's grainy, black and white video. But sometimes when you see somebody in a bar fight or shooting, you think, well, they should have avoided that scene. He wasn't doing anything wrong.
He was just sitting there.
He's just sitting there, and a guy comes up from behind him and plugs him.
And I keep reading that they keep describing it as a club, and it may be, but it looked like just sort of a casual patio night for a lot of those guys, just kind of hanging out. And this guy comes up. Two people are in custody with Dominican police: the driver and the actual shooter. The driver was the one who got caught and beaten badly by the crowd, which, probably not the best way to handle this situation, but it shows you how much they love Big Poppy down there. I think the whole crowd is like, what are you doing?
You or I get shot, and the guy, you know, I'll call 911, but can I get another beer here?
Maybe.
But these people went after him. I mean,
yeah.
And, you know, when I heard about this story, and then I just started to replay Ortiz stuff in my mind, I thought of the speech he gave to the crowd after the Boston Marathon bomb.
Right.
You remember that?
Yeah, Boston's strong. They really rallied around him.
This is, I'll bleep, the clip here is bleeped. And it's a little distorted because he was really hugging the mic. But before the baseball game, you remember what it was like after the Boston Marathon attack. The world was just on edge. They're going to play a baseball game. Ortiz comes out and addresses the crowd and says this.
This jersey that we wear today, it doesn't say Red Sox. It say Boston. We want to thank you, Mayor Menino, Governor Patrick, the whole police department, for the great job that they did this past week. This is our city. And nobody gonna dictate our freedom. Stay strong. Thank you.
They didn't bleep it when it was live on TV that day.
No.
This is our city. Nobody gonna dictate our freedom. Stay strong. Thank you. And the crowd goes bananas. Yeah. Boy, that'll...
Three-time World Series champ. And so many big moments in Red Sox history.
Enshrine you into a lot of hearts with that.
And since we're doing sports real quick, John, quick shout-out to our women's national soccer team up 2-0 in the opening round of the World Cup, which has just begun.
Okay, buddy, we'll listen for you with Rokan. Chime in otherwise if you like to. Steve, you know, I've had this eye problem. I've missed a few days because of it lately. I'm fine, but I've just been missing a couple of days recovering. So they said don't use your eyes too much.
Sure.
But I've been reading Soulless, The Case Against R. Kelly by Jim DeRogatis, the
yes.
music critic at the Sun-Times. And if I end up going blind, it's going to be his fault. Because I'm reading this book, and I cannot put it down. I'm serious now. Every journalism student in America should read Soulless by Jim DeRogatis. If you have a son or daughter who wants to go into broadcasting or journalism, print or electronics someday, have them read this book. It's a fascinating story about R. Kelly, the criminal, the pop artist, the hip-hop artist. It's a story about his music. It's also a story about the crimes he's committed. And it's the story of the journalist who was tracking it down. And when they think they've got the goods, then a witness doesn't want to go on the record or talk to the press. And it's a fascinating story about how hard it was to pin it down. From the time he was indicted to the time the trial took place, 6 years lapsed. It was 6 years before they got that case to actually go to trial. And then the witness who would have turned the tide, the woman who participated in this sex act with R. Kelly, she's the quote-unquote juvenile victim in this story. She doesn't want to testify. So there's the state prosecuting the case on behalf of this woman. It's a criminal charge against R. Kelly, but she won't testify. So R. Kelly's lawyers are bellowing in the courtroom, as DeRogatis describes it in the book. If there's a victim here, where is she? She's on the south side of Chicago. She's right down the street. Why isn't she here? Maybe because R. Kelly isn't the man on the tape. Maybe that's a fake tape. And the trial goes on that way. That was the Adams son and father. You remember them when they represented Blagojevich. And the judge in this case, Judge Gahan, who you remember from the Brown's Chicken story, from the R. Kelly story, from the Laquan McDonald trial, he loves high-profile cases. And his description of Judge Gahan is not all that flattering, shall we say. It's a fascinating, fascinating book. And there's so many people who just so let you down, who take your breath away in this book. For instance, there's R. Kelly. He's being tried with child pornography. And on his deathbed, one of his three attorneys says, oh, he's guilty as hell, but my job was to represent him. But on his deathbed, the judge, the attorney goes, oh, yeah, he did it. So here's Reverend Meeks. When they were having during that 6 years between his first being charged and the actual trial taking place, and R. Kelly is a free man for the whole time. So there's these hearings that will sometimes take place at the courtroom. And there's Reverend Meeks getting a school bus full of children from Rainbow Push, putting them on the bus and having them show up as a sort of prop of goodwill for R. Kelly. The people that rallied around R. Kelly in this book will just make you sad, including, not infrequently, the parents of the girls that were victimized. And you come away time and again as you read this book going, how does this guy get away with it? And Soulless tells you how he does. But I'm telling you, the book works on so many levels because it's not just the story of R. Kelly, the musician. He was really good at what he did. It's also the story of a man who's addicted to sex and should be in jail. And it's the story of these two intrepid journalists who are trying to track the story down. Jim DeRogatis' book is called Soulless. The pub date is tomorrow. And we've got Jim scheduled to come into our studio and tell us that story. It'll make your head spin. What are your plans tomorrow at 1 o'clock? Be listening to this station, WGN. A little while ago, we were talking about the... You're talking to me, Aleph? Yes or no? Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's do this first, and then we'll do that. A little while ago, we were talking about the hacking of Radiohead, right? And I said, if you've ever been hacked, ransomware, you know, somebody says, hey, if you don't give us money, we're going to shut your company down. Let me know. Walt said something like that happened to him. Hey, Walt, you're on WGN. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Pretty good, Walt. What happened?
I'm a web developer, small business. It had happened to me. I knew of it. One day I turned on my computers and I got the green screen, and it was telling me that it was ransomware. I was shut down. And I thought about it for several hours. Now, what I went through could be something that would save, if you have listeners out there who have small businesses and they're thinking, man, if this happened to me, I could never afford this out of my business to come up with the ransom.
How much did they want, Walt?
$20,000.
Okay.
So I thought about it and I said, to heck with it. I had backed up all my files before as a regular cleanup procedure, all my customer records, all of the code I'd written. And I restarted my computer and went on, and it disappeared. It was fake. So what was missing from the report this morning is that for every time there's a real scam,
right,
there's lots of guys that are just doing it as a, you know, they're trying to latch onto it, and they never really are that bad.
Yeah, that's a good point. Either way, though, they'll take the cryptocurrency from you. Is that what they wanted you to do?
Yeah, they wanted me to, and that really is a problem for people who've never dealt with it, to find out how to do that.
Get the bitcoins for $20,000. Yeah, yeah. But you're right. I mean, so that's you're right. We did not cover that angle. We were treating all of these thefts as legitimate, but maybe it's somebody just sending you. But they had to be able to at least put up the green screen. You log on to your computer, and there's a screen saying we're now robbing you. But maybe they didn't have the technology to actually compromise your files. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that. Plus, if it had been real. And if you have a small business and you're worried about this, if you back up your computers to something that isn't in the computer, up into the cloud or to a backup hard drive that can be disconnected from the computer, you're going to be okay. You can just laugh at these guys.
The cases that I have heard about lately, I've heard about two others, and one of them was $20,000, by the way. I don't know if, you know, they did that, but I do know that... the company lost all sorts of contact information, and I don't know what software they used to place and take orders, but suddenly everything was slowing down because this was a real one. You know, they didn't pay the money and they got compromised.
I have heard of that too, but I'm also surprised that a company that had that kind of valuable information wouldn't be securely backing it up every night. I really am.
Yeah. Maybe they did, and I don't know what the reload process is like, but one way or another, they didn't pay it, and whatever they could do, the criminals did. And then another company did pay, and lo and behold, at least these were nice criminals. They didn't shut them down, you know? But in your case, yours was a fake anyway, huh?
It was a fake anyway, but I would have been okay if it had been real.
Yeah.
I could have bought a computer for a lot less than what they wanted and loaded all my stuff on it.
Isn't it funny, though? To me, that is like the stuff of a sci-fi fiction novel. And evidently, that happens right here in River City, huh?
Oh, yes. And, you know, you just go to the wrong website or you click on the wrong email and that can do it.
Yeah.
You know the easiest way to inject a virus into a big company?
What's that?
You put it on a thumb drive. Put it on a thumb drive and leave it on a table in the cafeteria.
And somebody's going to grab it and plug it in and go, hey, I wonder what this is, huh?
They will.
That's kind of a reverse of what happened to Radiohead. Radiohead had their music backed up on a thumb drive. Somebody got that, said, hey, I'm now going to distribute, sell. I'm going to use your music for my own profit unless you give me $150,000. In the case of Radiohead, they said, screw it, we'll just release it ourselves, and now there's no profit in it for you, which is, you know, convenient for them. That's not always an option for other people, but they've actually turned it into a charity thing as well.
Hey, yeah, listen, I need lemonade.
Appreciate you listening, Walt. Thanks for the heads up on that, man.
Okay, bye.
Yeah. I have a lot of stuff backed up on a hard drive. I don't know where it is now, though. John Stewart was talking to the Congress today. He's upset that I'm not following this that closely. I guess the first responders have not gotten the sort of care that they need. And so here is Stewart telling the members of this congressional panel that they need to free up the funds to help the firefighters, the EMT, the police officers, the people that responded on 9/11.
Behind me, a filled room of 9/11 first responders. And in front of me, a nearly empty Congress. Sick and dying, they brought themselves down here to speak to no one. It's shameful. It's an embarrassment to the country, and it is a stain on this institution. And you should be ashamed of yourselves for those that aren't here, but you won't be. Because accountability doesn't appear to be something that occurs in this chamber. We don't want to be here.
That's John Stewart.
Lou doesn't
today.
Want to be here.
Yeah, no, we got it. That's John Stewart today, and he's good. You know, I kind of miss him at times. When you think about all this, maybe it's just as well that John Stewart isn't out there each night doing a newscast / comedy show about what's happening in the world, because he was really good when he was doing it. But the anxiety and anger and polarization is so high right now that I'm not sure that it would be all that helpful. I mean, you've got your Colberts and you've got all of these guys that are doing it anyway. But he was so razor sharp. He was so on point.
Wasn't he the one that kind of paved the way of that, you know, basically doing all politics?
Yep. At least that's the way I remember. Now, maybe somebody preceded him, but he sure brought that art to its own level.
And Stephen Colbert worked under him.
Right. So Colbert is his protege, if you will. And I thought there's no way Colbert is going to pull that off. Colbert does a pretty good job.
I think a lot of them
do a pretty good job.
He's very smart. He has obviously a great, very talented writing team. But yeah, I mean, when you pave the way like Jon Stewart did, it's hard to beat that.
Which is hard, and it was hard to turn him off because he was very funny. His monologues were just so well researched. Now, you may be on the other side of the political fence, and you probably didn't watch. And if you did, you probably wouldn't like some of the things that he said. Or, Lord, can you imagine what he would be saying and doing now? He'd be losing his mind. I've thought about that way about David Letterman, too. Not that Letterman was super political. Letterman was kind of a nice antidote to that. But I wonder what David Letterman would be saying and doing on TV each night today. I think about that when I think about Bob Collins, the legendary morning anchor here at WGN Radio, a show host. Bob wasn't doing the news, but he was an anchor for this station. And Bob's politics were to the right. And I wonder how Bob would have been handling the news and commentary of the day. I think it would have been really challenging for him. It would have been good because it would have been Bob Collins.
I think either way, whichever way you lie, there's a lot of material for you.
Yeah. Well, that's it. So that's why you think Jon Stewart is, you know, he was doing this when Obama was president. Imagine when Donald Trump is president. If ever there were fruit on the tree, it would be now. This would just be such a rich environment for Stewart. But again, I think it would almost be difficult for me to watch that every night because it's enough as it is. It's 2:55. We'll head into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom and see what Ro and Anna have coming up next on WGN. I follow, for reasons I don't recall now, did I just lose it? Here it is. I follow a Twitter account called, I think it's called, it's like Midwest versus Everybody. Yeah, Midwest versus Everybody. Does that make any sense to you, Kevin? Are you familiar with Midwest versus Everybody?
I mean, it makes sense that there's an account like that.
Yeah, there's an account like everything.
Right. Is it sports related? Is it just us? Are the things we do in the Midwest?
I think it's Midwest-centric stuff.
Like pop versus soda?
Exactly. So yeah. This one is the 8 levels of Midwestern anger. I'll do them in descending order or ascending order. I'll finish with the angriest a person from the Midwest gets. Listen here, pal. Followed by, for Pete's sake. Number 3, well, now, wait a minute. Number 4, if I had a nickel for every time. Number 5, for heaven's sake. Number 6, geez Louise. Now you've got somebody from Iowa angry. I suppose that would include Chicago. Number 7, hold your horses.
I don't think anybody in Chicago is saying hold your horses. Well, I know we're a Midwest town, but we don't always really feel like a Midwest town.
And number 8, the angriest a person from the Midwest can be is when they say, whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That is accurate. I think I said that the other day.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Time. And I just said it to like a house full of kids this morning. Whoa, whoa, whoa. And well, all of them stopped.
I have to take umbrage with some of this.
What's the matter, Ro?
You know, geez Louise.
Yeah.
That is in the city of Chicago, that is not what is said.
That's what I was yeah. saying.
I mean, and in the close in environs, that is not what's said. It might be, you know, I'm sure it's something very sweet that's said in Morris, Illinois, but not something very sweet that is said in Chicago. I'd like to take Chicago away from this list a little bit.
Kind of carve it out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So Midwest accepts Chicago versus everybody.
Yeah. Because
Morris versus everybody.
Yeah. I mean, you don't hear. You know, you got to basically get into non-collar counties to hear geez Louise.
Nobody's yelling out their window on the Kennedy, geez Louise, why'd you cut me off, buddy?
Right.
For heaven's sake.
Yeah, no, no.
For heaven's sakes.
No, no.
Yeah.
If I had a nickel for every time I got cut off on the Eisenhower.
Yeah, it's got a little bit more of a, you know, that sort of a thing, you know, on the Ryan than geez Louise.
Ro, will you give us the Chicago 8 levels of anger?
Well, I think
what the you son of a, oh my God, thank your mother.
Right, the mother thing comes up occasionally.
You love that. Yeah, that's it. That's, yeah. That's
in all languages, it's funny, and you kind of understand it.
Yep.
And I'm sorry I asked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Ro, you're kind of off, the scale on the anger stuff. You know, we have to go several levels deep.
It starts
yours.
With like a, oh boy.
Oh boy.
Right,
you,
oh boy.
Wait. What did you just say? It starts with that.
That's how it starts.
Which is not even near whoa, whoa, whoa.
No, so. You did not just say that. Because it moves it to there, and then it goes, all right.
All right.
Do we have to take this outside?
Just listen to Ro during any sort of Kim Fox, Jesse Smollett conversation. You'll get all stages, all 8 stages of Chicago
I think it goes to level
anger.
10 on this program.
There's what the F, and there's for F's sake, which those go back to back like that.
We can't even have this conversation.
I know, you can't. Well, you know what? In the podcast, we'll do this later on. John.
What are you doing on the radio today?
The very good question. Lourdes Duarte is going to join us here. A judge has dismissed the Obama Center lawsuit. So construction can begin now on the Obama Center. And this was the most, among the ridiculous lawsuits in Chicago this year alone. Don't get me started.
Whoa, this, whoa, whoa.
What?
For heaven's sakes.
This is one of the big ones. And listen to this. In the 4 o'clock hour, you want to stay tuned for this. The commissioner of Chicago's Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, is going to join us, Rosa Escoreno. And she's in charge of the new motorized scooters.
Oh, those things.
That are hitting this weekend in Chicago. And when I say hitting, I mean actually hitting each other.
Yeah.
And we will talk about that.
Are you guys on board? Do you like that idea?
I'm not a huge fan. They're already out there, the private, you know, people who own them themselves.
Yeah.
But this one is going to be where you kind of just drop them anywhere.
Select neighborhoods. And they're going to drop like 3,000 of them.
Let me ask you a question. How does the scooter select the neighborhood? Because people will select the neighborhoods they're going to leave the scooters in, right? So that's a totally different situation. I have questions. I would like to be I know this was not her idea in the first place, I don't think.
No.
But
be kind to her.
But they have sent her out to go sell this. So I have some questions that she does need to answer on behalf of the geniuses who came up
citizenry.
With this idea. What the?
Have a good show, Rokan.
I hear a geez Louise coming up.
Anna DeVlantis.
I hear one.
Thank you, John.